D-Mace Vingan and Donick 102.5 The Game. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and David Janes here with you. Willie Donick will be joining us momentarily. Derek and I are live at the all-new Circus Sportsbook Kentucky in the gaming hall just across the Kentucky border. Come on up and join us. Watch Monday Night Football, Eagles and Packers tonight. Most of y'all may not even have ESPN or ABC right now. So if you need a place to watch the Monday Night Football game, may I suggest the Circus Sportsbook. Willie Donick is live in New York City with the Nashville Predators, who will be taking on the Rangers tonight. Puck drop at 6, pregame at 5. As always, right here on 102.5 The Game. So a two-hour abbreviated version of DVD. Willie will be logging on momentarily. He has been pumped full of antibiotics and steroids, Derek Mason.
So his voice
is feeling better. I saw him at the game on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Sounded better. I don't want to say great, because he was still a little scratchy, but he sounds better. And Willie will be joining us in just a moment. By the way, Chase and Big Joe picked the best day to go to Key West,
exactly.
Florida.
Yes.
There are flurries outside, and I love cold weather. Uh-huh. I absolutely love cold weather, but not this quickly. It was in the 70s just a few days ago, and now it's not even 40 degrees outside.
They didn't ease us into this.
No, I need some easing. I need some easing into the cold weather. I love the cold weather.
I hate it.
Which is strange, because you were born in it.
Yes.
You were raised in it.
I'm far removed from it.
That is true. You have become a big baby.
Exactly.
You have become a big baby since leaving Michigan. So
we'll
see if Derek can survive a couple of hours in the cold. Well, you don't have to be cold in here. It's nice and warm here inside the Circus Sportsbook in the Mint Gaming Hall just across the Kentucky border. No Titans game yesterday, and quite frankly, it was kind of nice not to watch a losing football team yesterday. So let's start with the football team in town that did play this weekend, Derek. Mm-hmm. The Vanderbilt Commodores survive. The Commodores survive the Auburn Tigers 45-38 in overtime to keep their CFP hopes alive. By the way, with Vanderbilt off this week, Clark Lee will not be joining us this week. No 4 o'clock today. We will be catching up with Clark Lee again next week as the Commodores prepare to take on Kentucky next Saturday, November 22nd. But Vanderbilt survives Auburn 45-38 in overtime, and there are many different aspects of this game that I want to get to. But the Commodores rallied from 17-3 down, won the game in overtime. This is how I want to start, Derek.
Yes.
Diego Pavia. A total 489 yards, 377 passing yards, 112 rushing yards, 4 total touchdowns, 3 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown, as we welcome in Willie Donick live from New York City. Perfect timing, Willie, as we discussing the Commodores overtime win against Auburn. But Diego Pavia, nearly 500 yards of total offense by himself, 4 touchdowns. I'm not sure if Diego Pavia is going to win the Heisman Trophy. I would bet against it. But to me, Derek, and Willie, you can answer this as well. To me, Pavia's performance on Saturday, let's call it Heisman finalist worthy.
Yeah, and it's you know, 2 weeks in a row where he has, you know, willed his team either to a comeback, you know, almost victory or a comeback victory. Obviously, Texas game, you know, they were able to come back. He and Eli Stowers connected a few times. They were able to come back. He led drives to put them back in the game. And if they get that onside kick, Vandy may end up winning that game. You just never know. But he was the guy that was the driving, that was the engine of that. And then once again, his team didn't play as well in the first half. Come out in the second half, and Diego sort of, you know, he builds on top of this legacy that he's leaving at Vanderbilt. They're going to be talking about Diego for decades after this, and I'm just being honest. This was sort of a Heisman finalist game. The Heisman game can be against UT, because the way it's looking, if that one's going to be a brawl for it all. Well, at least in Vanderbilt's case. But he's staying true to what he said. He's out there. He's putting it all on the line. And, you know, I don't think people are laughing at him now when he said, we are a playoff caliber team. We're thinking about championships. They laughed at him 2 or 3 months ago. They're not laughing now. This kid's damn good. I don't know what his future is after college football, but he's going to be remembered as one of the, maybe not greatest, but one of the most electrifying quarterbacks within the last 10 to 15 years. It's not flashy, but he gets the job done.
I can only imagine how Coach Willie was feeling during the course of this game. So, Willie, your thoughts on Vanderbilt's win, and let's start with Diego Pavia. I'm calling it a Heisman finalist-worthy performance by Pavia. Nearly 500 total yards of offense on his own, 4 touchdowns. Your thoughts on the game and Pavia's performance?
Well, it was a great game. Number one, Coach Willie would have been had Coach Willie been able to talk last week, I would have warned you how tough this game was going to be. I knew that Auburn was going to get the new coach bump. They came in with some different looks that they had not looked like before, especially on offense. Auburn has a lot of talent. It's a classic example of there are no easy games in the SEC. The weakest teams that you perceive in the SEC, even if their record is around 500, are a lot better than a lot of leagues around the country. So I knew it was going to be a tough game. And Pavia, no question. If you look around the league, guys, or the nation, he's in about the number 4 or 5 spot. And I really think it would be hard for him to win it. I would love to see him recognized in the top 3. And for him to do that, I think they've got to win the last 2. Mm-hmm. And if they win the last 2, then I think he's very worthy of top 3. But, you know, I think the most significant thing, and Joe Rexroad asked the question after the game, I thought the biggest thing in the game was Vanderbilt's ability to switch from being a low-tempo offense that tries to milk the clock and make it a low-possession game, which is the way they've won a lot of games since Pavia took over as the quarterback, into an up-tempo, no-huddle, quick-to-the-line-of-scrimmage. And the numbers just shot up. So Pavia is showing you that his numbers are even better if his team plays more of a normal or up-tempo style. So I think sometimes people penalize his numbers because sometimes they don't look all that sexy, even though he's really the reason that they're winning. But he can show you that he can put up the big gaudy stats that get everybody's attention for the Heisman.
Ken on our YouTube chat says, do y'all honestly think Pavia's numbers are Heisman worthy? Well, for what it's worth, I'm looking at the ESPN bet, which isn't going to be around for much longer, but I'm looking at ESPN bet. Diego Pavia is tied for the 5th best odds for the Heisman Trophy at the moment, tied with Jeremiah Smith at plus 2,500, Fernando Mendoza plus 160, Julian Sayin plus 185, Ty Simpson plus 600, Marcel Reed plus 850.
So obviously what he's doing, people are recognizing it. I understand his numbers may not be gaudy, but he does what it takes to win football games. He is the reason why he and everybody else, but I'm saying he's sort of spearheading this outside of Clark Lee, but he's the reason why they are winning. It's been a culture shift for Vanderbilt. And it's noticeable, not just here in Tennessee, Nashville, but it's noticeable, I think, throughout, you know, the college world, that this is no longer the same old Vanderbilt team. And they got a quarterback that may not be, he's not conventional, but he's getting the job done. He's winning football games. And he is, because that's what the Heisman is. It's just who's the best player, you know, or the most valuable player for their team.
I'm glad you
or
brought,
in the country.
I'm glad you brought up that point. And Willie, I think Willie will share my opinion on this. I believe the strict definition of the Heisman Trophy is top player in college football.
Yes.
When you're voting for an MVP award, and the Heisman Trophy, is kind of like an MVP award, not directly, but when it comes to voting for MVP, which is something I do in the NHL, I vote for the MVP. Do you consider the MVP to be the best player in the league or the player who is most valuable to his team? So the question is, if the Heisman Trophy, if Heisman Trophy voters are looking at which players are most valuable to their respective teams, Diego Pavia absolutely has to be at or near the top of that list. So it depends, Willie, and to Derek's point, it depends on your definition of the Heisman Trophy.
Right, but I think D-Mace is hitting it. It's an MVP way. But just like they were showing, and this is becoming as annoying as the Joe Lunardi first four in, last four out kind of thing, where they keep showing Vanderbilt's odds if they win of making the playoff are X. If they lose, 0.1. Well, no duh. It could be 0.0. We know if they lose, they're out, right? And so for Pavia and the Heisman, if they lose another game, realistically, he's not a candidate.
No, he's
right?
not.
If he is the guy that gets Vanderbilt to the college football playoff, you better believe he is a Heisman Trophy candidate and should be a finalist. But the numbers, the guy asked about the numbers on the text line. That's my point. The numbers are what they need to be. If they need to play high tempo, yeah, he throws for 350 and runs for over 100. If it's a low tempo game like the Missouri game or like some of the other games where they try to milk the clock, you're not going to see that in the eye-popping counting numbers, right? It's the efficiency and the timeliness of when he makes the plays that separates him. And that's what the voters need to recognize. And there's a million voters across the country. I have no idea if the people in Montana or Seattle or Maine or New Hampshire really pay attention to his value. And that's why it's going to be tough for him ultimately to win it. But if he gets him to the playoffs, you've got a story there. And the Heisman is as much about the story as about anything else.
So the good news and the bad news about this game. The good news, Vanderbilt racks up 45 points, comes back to win. As Derek, you mentioned earlier, they nearly rallied from 34-10 down at Texas, lost 34-31. They did rally from 17-3 down against Auburn on Saturday. So that's the good news. The bad news is, over the past 2 weeks, Vanderbilt has allowed 991 total yards and 8 touchdowns. That's an average of 495.5 yards against per game. In the previous 8 games, 322.6 yards against per game. So the defense is struggling right now. Mm-hmm. And our very own Joe Rexrode wrote a really good column on The Athletic off the game with the headline, Vanderbilt, a far from flawless CFP hopeful, keeps finding ways to show off its good side. He mentions in the story, CFP committee loves offense, and you're getting offense from Vanderbilt. But the defense has been struggling in recent weeks against teams that really haven't been playing well offensively. The Longhorns were certainly disappointing offensively leading into that game. Auburn scored 3 points the week before against Kentucky. So I know, Willie and Derek, with how much value, how much time Clark Lee spends working on that defense, he can't be thrilled with how they've played defensively over the past 2 weeks.
No, you can't be. But even in all that, they found a way to win. Now, I'm sure behind the scenes, Clark and his staff knows this isn't, sustainable, where you're down, 14 points each time and then or more than that, and then you got to come and try to rally. As you get later in the season, they got Kentucky and UT left. It's going to get harder and harder to do that. Kentucky may not be, on your level at this point, but neither was Auburn coming into the game. And what happened? Auburn was able to put up points on you. So from a defensive standpoint, if you look back at the Texas game, and we talked to Clark about this, and you mentioned this, Adam, they had more than, it was almost more than half of their yardage, or close to it, was after the catch or after contact.
Yes.
So they have, it's not like they're playing bad defense, at least in the Texas game. Clark talked about it. You just have to, when the play is there, you got to make it. You got to make, if you got them behind the line of scrimmage, you got to make that play, and then those other guys got to rally. Vandy showed that if they are not, the attention to detail is not there, when they play one of these faster teams, they may get outmatched a little bit when it comes to that. And I think that's what's happening. I think, you know, they play Texas, they play Auburn, maybe a little bit faster than them, and they're not doing the things necessary that they have to do in the first half, and then all of a sudden in the second half they figure things out. But that's not a recipe for them to continue to win. Eventually, it's going to run out. It ran out against Texas. The next two games, they can't allow that to happen. The defense has to play much better. They have to tackle better, and that's something that they just hadn't been doing.
Let's go to
I agree, Derek. They've got to tackle better, and they've got to get out to better starts defensively. But I will say this about Auburn's offense. Maybe I am looking at it only through the Vanderbilt prism, but you tell me, Derek, is number eight Coleman, the catches he made,
he's a good player.
Catch with the left hand, a one-hand catch with the right hand, and Cobb, the running back, and Daniels is another one of those guys who's been in a million places. He's played a million games, and he played really well. I don't understand why Auburn, this maybe is why they fired Hugh Freeze. I don't see how Auburn scores 3 points against Kentucky. There's plenty of talent there. So it's not like they're going up against scrubs. This is the SEC. But I grant you, and Clark Lee knows it, they've got to be more together. That defense is about personnel all playing together on one page. They don't have superstars. They have a lot of good players that all need to know what's happening. They have a complex system, and they haven't been on the same page and made short tackles the last couple of weeks.
615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Your reaction to Vanderbilt's 45-38 win in overtime against Auburn on Saturday, keeping the Commodores' CFP hopes alive. Diego Pavia, nearly 500 total yards of offense, 4 total touchdowns from Diego Pavia, 3 passing touchdowns, 1 rushing touchdown. 615-737-1025. We will get to your reaction and continue the conversation coming up next. Mondays were made for Macero. Big screens, bold flavors, and all the football action. From queso to kickoffs, this is how Macero does game night. Macero Football Mondays and 12th South. Don't miss a snap. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. We are presented by Bax Homeworks. Remodeling done right. Get a free estimate at BAXHomeworks.com. Let's go to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Mark in Nashville. Mark, where you been, man?
Hey, how you doing, Adam? Willie D. Mace. I've been around. Cromwell emailed me the other day and said, "Hey, Mark, we need you here, man. We got to get the ratings back. Number one call in Nashville. Here I am. I'm here to the rescue now. Here I am."
Thank you, Mark. We appreciate it. What you got?
Hey, look, game the other day was a great game. Diego Pavia, 377 yards, 3 touchdowns, 112 yards rushing. Stowers had a good game. He took a couple of big shots in that game, D-Mace. I was impressed with the way he held on with the football and stuff. And the defense, like you said, Gregory is going to have to get in there and revamp that defense and get them to playing some better ball. The secondary looks weak right now. You don't want that against Tennessee with Aguilar, because Josh Heupel will expose that, and he will put up numbers against that defense in that game coming up 2 weeks against Tennessee. Kentucky's coming in as a hot team this Saturday, so that'll be a good game. But I heard Willie talking about and D-Mace, I know you love wide receivers. Cam Coleman is a star in the making. He's going to be a beast, man. And Auburn does have the talent over on offense with Daniels and Cobb. It really makes you wonder why Hugh Freeze didn't play these guys like he should have. I don't know what the problem is, but, hey, man, like I said, I'm here. Adam, let it marinate, Adam. Number one caller. I don't have to call every day, but I'm the number one caller. Let it marinate, Adam. When you go home tonight and you're reading that book, you look up at the ceiling in your house, Adam, and say, Mark Nashville, number one caller. He always is. Willie, how you doing, Willie?
Mark, there's a lot of great banners in the rafters here at Madison Square Garden. I can just see it.
I know,
Mark.
I know
it.
Number
one caller. It's hanging right next to the 1994 Stanley Cup banner for the Rangers.
That's right. Put me up there, Willie. Get my canary yellow jacket and my white pants ready.
I got you right next to Willis Reed.
That's right. But I'm not going to limp my way off into Madison Square Garden. I'm going to walk my way up into Madison Square Garden.
There you go.
Over there, Joe.
Oh, man.
Thank you. Thank you for the call, Mark.
We appreciate it. Yep. Thank you, Mark. Yep.
We appreciate you.
I got it. I needed that, Mark.
Let me ask you this, Derek. And Willie, you chime in too, but I'm going to start with the wide receiver on the panel here. Which catch in college football this weekend was more impressive, independent of the game situation? Cam Coleman's catch against Vanderbilt, the one that made it 38-36, mm-hmm. or Omar Cooper's touchdown for Indiana to win the game against Penn State? So take away the game situation. I'm just talking about the quality of the catch. Which was more impressive to you?
Well, both catches were critical to both teams. Now, obviously, Auburn had to go into what is deemed a second overtime or another series. And you know, Vandy ended up winning it. But that catch was impressive. I think the catch from Omar, the kid out of Indiana, that was a more difficult catch from this standpoint. When you're in the back of the end zone like that and you have to jump that high, your spatial awareness, you got to concentrate on trying to catch the football. And then you have to have the awareness to know where you are at to make sure you get at least 1 foot down in college football. If you would have made that, if you'd have got 2 feet down, that would have been like damn impressive. He got 1 foot down. 1 foot down, it still was impressive, again, because it's a combat catch, one. It's high, two, with the back of the end zone. And you got to concentrate on catching the ball all while knowing or hoping that your spatial recognition is where it needs to be in order for you to tap a toe down. That was the difference between them, you know, being ranked possibly number one after that game or that catch, or them staying at number three or dropping to like six or seven. That one play. Because after this, they don't have anybody left. Penn State was their last tough game. And they don't have anybody else after this. But that catch was their season in a sense. Not meaning they were not going to make the playoffs, but they lose that game, everybody's saying, see, same old Indiana. When they play somebody good, you know, they lose. And Penn State really wasn't a great team, but they went in there and won. But they did what was necessary, and that was a hell of a catch, man. Not many guys are going to make that catch in college football, but he's one of those guys that are able to.
Willie, that catch by Omar Cooper short-circuited Gus Johnson. Yeah. I don't know if you heard the call from Gus Johnson on that play.
Well, you gotta love Gus Johnson.
Yes.
He is so great at moments like that. I just love his energy. You're right. But here's what I would add to the Coleman. A lot of people saw this, but he makes the left-hand one-hand catch for the touchdown, which was a brilliant catch mm-hmm. with pretty good coverage. And then they go right back to him on the two-point conversion, and he makes a one-hand catch with his right hand to pull it in. So he made a combination of two to tie the game. If he doesn't make either one, Vanderbilt might win in regulation. But that game was so close that, you know, it was plays like that that separated. I'm very curious about Coleman as a pro prospect. He kind of got banged up, and Vanderbilt did a good job, I think, in the post-spectacular catch combo there of not letting him hurt them again. And it's a good thing, because I was spending the whole rest of the game watching, going, when are they going to go to him one more time? When is he going to make one more big play? And they really kept it from happening, including on the last play in overtime. They did a nice bait and switch where they brought the corner up, C.J. Hurd, and then right before the snap, after they got the signal from the sideline, he busts back and creates a bracket coverage. So they had him on either side for that fourth down throw.
The CFP rankings are going to get a shakeup tomorrow. The two teams directly in front of Vanderbilt lost over the weekend. Virginia, which helps Derek Mason and silly underdog picks.
Woo, woo.
Virginia lost to Wake Forest. Louisville lost to Cal, right? So UVA and Louisville lose. So we assume Vanderbilt moves from 16 to 14. And there are some gigantic SEC matchups this weekend. Vanderbilt, of course, is off. They play again next Saturday at home against Kentucky. Texas at Georgia, Oklahoma at Alabama. Huge. I don't think I can emphasize this enough, Willie. Huge games, not only in the SEC, but in the college football playoff race.
Yeah, I think Vanderbilt, odds are, I think, will move up by not playing. And that's the opposite of what happens sometimes in a playoff race where you move down by not playing. Just by the way that the schedule is lying. So a lot of people keep wondering, you know, hey, what happens if Vanderbilt goes 10-2? Are they for sure in, or are they going to still be out? You cannot do anything other than win the two games. I think we know how tough that game is going to be when the stakes are high. You just saw Virginia and Louisville, two good examples of good teams that when the spotlight and the glare gets a little bit more and people are starting to consider you, I think it gets harder to even win games that you are, quote, supposed to win. I think there was a little bit of that on Saturday. I think the team that's playing against a team like that, like Auburn, or like who was it that beat Virginia?
Wake Forest.
They get up for that game. That's a huge game. Hey, we can knock somebody out of the playoff. That becomes that team gets another gear. And I'll tell you what, Kentucky is playing a lot better. If you think Kentucky's just going to walk in and Vanderbilt's going to beat them by 30, that's going to be another very difficult game. And I think Kentucky will bring everything to the table in that one. So just to get to Tennessee with a chance, there's a lot of football left. But I do think while Vanderbilt's off, I think they might catch a break. They might even move up a notch or two to really put them in the mix. But it's all about winning the last two games.
Eli on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHunting.com, says, Pavia reminds me of Doug Flutie 2.0. So I will lean on the old heads here to tell me if that is an appropriate comparison.
Hey, Doug Flutie was the man. He won the Heisman. I think Doug was a much better passer than Diego. But when you're talking about able to make things happen, move around in a pocket, I think Doug Flutie was one of those guys. But, again, Doug was a much better passer than Diego is at this point in his career, but both of them did what they needed to do, or, you know, obviously what Doug did and winning the Heisman, but Diego's doing what he needs to do to help his team win. So, yeah, there may be some comparisons if you want to look at both of them with a fine-tooth comb, but I think, to me, and you could – let me know how you feel about this, Willie. I think Doug was a much better passer than Diego was.
Well, it's a great question.
Doug
Flutie, they both had that special ingredient.
Yeah.
I will say this.
He's more Tim Tebow than I think Doug Flutie.
I think that's a little bit closer. He's a smaller Tim Tebow, Pavia is, and he's actually a taller Doug Flutie. Doug Flutie, I think, compared to Diego Pavia. Flutie is a special guy. He played a lot of basketball in Nashville. I got to know him a little bit while he was playing in the CFL, and then all of a sudden he's back in the NFL. It was a really bizarre thing. He has a son that would visit Vanderbilt a lot. He would play pickup basketball with us. Great guy. But Flutie was a runner, scramble to throw. As you said, D-Mace, more of a passer. Like, Pavia gets those tough yards between the tackles. Flutie never did anything like that, right? But Pavia can become a little bit more like Tebow, where if it's third and short or, you know, third and six, he can run for it. You know, Flutie was not a runner. He was a guy that was going to just gun it. but both have that special quality. I think that is a comparison.
615-737-1025. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt's win against Auburn and the CFP landscape after this weekend in college football. But coming up next, we'll switch gears to the Tennessee Titans, who did not play this weekend. Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, will join us coming up next as the Titans gear up for the remainder of the season. 615-737-1025. 94.9 The Fan is your home for Vanderbilt women's basketball. Today, the Commodores take on Furman at 6 o'clock. Pregame starts at 5:45. D-Mace, Vingen, and Donick, 102.5 The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingen here with you. We will be joined by Teron Davenport momentarily. It was a good day for the Tennessee Titans yesterday, despite the fact that the Titans did not play. And we'll talk about this a little bit more once we hear from Teron Davenport. But the Jets won. The Jets defeated the Browns. The Saints won. The Saints defeated the Panthers. Even the Dolphins won their third game of the season, blowing out the Bills 30-13.
I'm so disappointed, Adam, that you have not led with the Tankathon.com. Come on, people want to know.
Tankathon.com looks mighty good for the Tennessee Titans right now.
It was a great Tankathon day.
It was a fabulous Tankathon day for the Tennessee Titans. We'll get back to that. But first, let's welcome in Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, who is presented each week by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. Teron, I want to start by asking you a question that I asked Derek Mason last week. How would you proceed with Calvin Ridley if and when he returns from his hamstring injury? Derek said, you got to get in where you fit in. You've got younger wide receivers who have been emerging over the past couple of weeks without Calvin Ridley. I know Calvin Ridley is being paid like the number one wide receiver. He is the most talented wide receiver on the team. But considering where this team is, the young receivers, do you simply plop Calvin Ridley back where he was, or does he have to, as Derek said, get in where he fits in?
No, I think he has to work his way back into the rotation. You also have the oncoming return of Bryce Oliver at some point, who I still think is deserving of reps as well. So when you look at this total picture, Alec Ironmanor is clearly your X. You have Van Jefferson, who filled in and did a solid job. Frankly, they didn't really miss a beat from Ridley to Jefferson, so you have that. But then you have the ultimate, and it's the guy that D-May said reminds him of Percy Harvin, and that's Jim DK. And I think DK is deserving of reps at Z as well as slot. I think getting a good read on him at Z is a good thing to do going into the draft season. I would imagine Ridley will be going after this year, so you could figure out, okay, you could slide DK in at Z and then draft a guy like a Mekhi Lemon, or you could allow who would play slot, or you could, work DK at both slot and Z and draft a guy like Jeremy Bernard, who could play Z. So the X position is taken care of. It's just a matter of figuring out the other two.
Teron, last week when we had you on, we were talking about Tavondre Sweat. And you said, correct me if I'm wrong, that you wouldn't have been surprised if the Titans traded Tavondre Sweat before the NFL trade deadline. They did not trade Tavondre Sweat before the NFL trade deadline. How surprised were you by that? And does the fact that the Titans did not trade Tavondre Sweat tell us anything about the front office's belief in him?
No, I don't think it tells you anything about their belief in him. I think him not getting traded is somewhat surprising. At the same time, you got to look at this is a talented player that obviously the organization invested a high pick in. So I think it's a little bit different from the Brownlee Jr. situation, whereas obviously, they weren't on the same page. I'll put it that way. I don't know I'll put it this way. They weren't on the same page. I know that the Sweat and the front office, it's not anywhere near as extreme as that situation, but everything isn't all goody-two-shoes as well. So, it's not a surprise that they didn't trade him, like a big surprise. It's somewhat of one.
Now, TD, I know this team needed the bye week, but if you look at both sides of the ball, Who do you feel needed it more? I look at the defense because of the injuries. I think that they needed this off week more than anybody to get Jeff back, hopefully. Arden Key back. Don't know what's going on with Snead. He may be done for the season. But guys like Arden Key and Jeffrey Simmons having that week off and getting them back, I think once they come back, I think the defense will look a lot better than what they have.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Anytime you could drop Jeffrey Simmons back into a defense that has been playing all right, I think it will increase. We know what he brings to the table. And then you have Sweat coming back as well, continuing to work his way back. So it's tough. I would say both sides needed it for different reasons. I think the offense just needed it because it's just like, hey, man, y'all got to look in the mirror and figure some things out. Whereas the defense is like, yo, you guys need a break, man. You know, so if I had to pick one, I would pick the offense just because they're dead last in the league in multiple categories. So to me, they need the bigger break.
Now, do you think they will – and you talked about DK, and the kid is just – each and every week it seems like he's getting better and he's figuring it out. But do you think they make a concerted effort, or have they talked about making a concerted effort of getting him the ball more, especially knowing where this team is at and they need to see their young players develop as the season goes?
Yeah, I mean, there's been some conversation about getting him the football more from what I understand. And just he's their playmaker, right? I mean, when you need a big play, like, he's the guy that has made it. And it doesn't always have to be the 38-yard touchdown against the Patriots, right? It could be that big-time catch, 15-yarder on the in-breaking route on the first series when they were facing the 3rd and 10, against the Chargers. You know, those are the things that – I think are very important, and that's the reason why they're going to look to get him the ball. But, you know, if you ask me, that tight end, old Gunnar Helm, needs to get more touches.
Teron Davenport is with us. Teron, I haven't heard much about this since the coaching change, but how do you think it's going with the new offensive line coach and the way the offensive line is playing? Because we know how critical it is, especially for J.C. Latham, to continue to develop. He's still only 22 years of age, which makes him 2 years younger than Diego Pavia. So just to put it in perspective, he's got some growing he can do. But as a group of five, I would love to see that group, gel down the stretch. That would be a nice thing. So how do you think it's going, that new relationship?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing you do have to say is coach is, because it's plural. So you look at the two. I think it's going about as well as you could imagine, just because it's tough when you have one figurehead leave and then two kind of work to come together to fill the role, right? So I think that's a difficult thing. And then you look at just the way things have gone, obviously with the quarterback holding the ball too long at times, other guys just getting whooped. There's still a lot of room for improvement. And this week is going to be tough because – you got those rushers are coming from both sides. So they'll have to figure some things out, who to help here, who to help there, because you can't help both sides all the time. And looking at this matchup, you're probably going to need to.
Okay, so with that in mind, what do you think Mike Borgonzi thinks of how Dan Moore has played? About what he thought, better or worse?
I would probably say it's somewhere between about what he thought and worse. It's gotten better, I will say that, and the penalties have decreased. But still, and I get the mindset that you got to pay a little bit more money to live in that neighborhood, right, of offensive linemen, signing one in a free agency. But I don't think that organization believes they got a full return on their investment. And you also look at the way the deal structured. I think it kind of – they had an idea that it could be that type of pitcher, and that's why you have that out after next year.
Teron Davenport is with us, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter. Teron, late last week, the Titans made the decision to release Quandre Diggs. What was the reasoning behind that decision?
Yeah, well, I talked to Quandre, and I mean, look, there's certain guys that you kind of like gravitate towards and become a little more thorough with, and he was one of them. And so as soon as it happened, I called him, you know, we talked, and it was a mutual parting. He understood what was going on as far as the push to get Kevin Winston Jr., who he respects immensely and knows is going to be a really good player. He understood the push to get the young guy more reps. But when you have four safeties, and he fully acknowledged, you know, that the veterans, Xavier Woods and Imani Hooker, those are really good players. And when you have four safeties rotating in two or three spots, it's tough for anybody to get into the flow of the game. So, you know, Quandre, he said he's going to take one for the team, and if he could go elsewhere, he'll go elsewhere. But that was the main thing. He just needed to – it wasn't something that was conducive to him being able to put the right film on display, the right play. And that's really the main reason why. No hard feelings or anything like that. He just said it was time for a change, and we'll see what happens.
Teron, what would you consider – a successful second half of the season for Cam Ward?
I think he needs to be able to see it, believe it, rip it a little bit more, stop drifting out of a clean pocket. I think he also has to learn to get the ball out of his hands a little bit quicker. Mike McCoy talked a little bit about that today when he was asked about the amount of yards, because great job by Terry McCormick finding it, but Cam Ward has at least 100 more yards lost on sacks than any other quarterback. And obviously a good chunk of that is because of the amount of sacks that he's taken. But at the same time, you got to look at just better feel for the game. I think that's the one. I couldn't put a statistical number on it. The only stat that I would care about, frankly, is the interceptions. Get those down and be able to – and the turnovers, right? And the rest, however it falls, is cool. But I think step one is securing the football a little bit more.
Last one for you, Teron. I'm sure there are plenty of Titans fans who are paying attention to what's going on in New England right now. The Patriots are 8-2. They went to Tampa, won yesterday. I believe that's 7 consecutive wins for Mike Vrabel's Patriots. I'm looking at the AFC standings. You've got the Colts at 8-2. You've got the Broncos at 8-2. You have the Patriots at 8-2. Where would you put the Patriots in the hierarchy of AFC contenders based on what you've seen from the Patriots and the other teams at the top of the list?
I put them ahead of the Broncos. I just think they're a complete team, man. You're starting to see players uncork themselves as guys that can make impact. Kyle Williams. I don't know if you got to watch any of him, but, you know, he was number 18. He caught the crosser, and he put his get-somewhere shoes on and took it to the house against the Bucks, right? And that was Cam Ward's receiver at Washington State. And then you look at Travion Henderson, you know, running the rock the way that he – these are playmakers that are emerging, and Drake May is playing out 74% completion. Yeah, give me that. And here's the thing. You have what you call the Vrabel special, the ability to – go in as an underdog and win. That's exactly what they did this past week. And you look at them, they're one of those teams where I believe they're pack and play. They're going to play good defense. They're going to run the football well and play efficient, turnover-free football. And that gives you a chance anywhere whatsoever. Look at the 2019 Titans. Obviously a different degree because Derrick Henry is the best running back in the last 5 years. But still, I think they are a contender.
ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter Teron Davenport has been our guest on DMA's Vingan and Adonic. He joins us every Monday at 3:40, and he is presented by Bart Durham Injury Law and fueled by Parman Energy. Teron, great stuff as always, my friend. We'll catch up next week.
All right, appreciate it. And I got some homework assignments. Adam, you're free from homework this week. I'm going to have some for you next week. But
okay.
Really, your job is this. Mooney Taka Murakami. Go look at him. It's the Japanese third baseman. I think the Mets should go get him.
Can you spell that for me, Teron?
Yes, indeed. M-U-N-E-T-K-A or T-A-K-A M-U-R-A-K-A-M-I.
Whew, that's a mouthful.
You got that, Willie?
Research him.
I got it. I'll have a little for you when I come back from Sweden. I'm going to talk to my Swedish baseball scouts when I get over there. But I am in New York right now, Teron, so I'll try to find a Met fan here at Madison Square Garden to give me the lowdown.
There you go. There you go. And D-Mace,
oh, yeah.
I want you to take care of your body. Give your body a treat.
Okay.
Right in Germantown, there's a place called Protocol, P-R-O-T-C-O-L. It's by Derek Morgan, the former Titan.
Okay.
Go in there, say TD sent you, and just tell them you want to see what's up for a former athlete.
Okay. I'll make sure I go.
You got your homework assignments, guys.
German
TD. Thank
German,
you.
Germantown. Okay.
615-737-1025. You guys got your homework assignments, so get to it. Teron will be looking for those a week from now. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, as Willie just mentioned, he's in New York City. The Predators are in New York City. And right after the game, Willie and the Predators are jetting across the Atlantic to Stockholm, Sweden for two games against the Pittsburgh Penguins. And I'm getting a vibe about this week that reminds me of a vibe I had actually would have been more than 5 years ago at this point. I can't do math. But I'm getting a vibe. And we'll discuss that coming up next. 615-737-1025. Derek and I are live at the Circus Sportsbook Kentucky inside the Mint Gaming Hall just over the Kentucky border. Willie Donick is in New York City with the Predators. Puck drop at 6 against the Rangers. And David James is back at the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service.